Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Bronx House Dawn from the Boogie Down Bronx, and you're now listening to Soundcheck from WNYC.
Introducing the King of Soul. Recently has been crowned as one of the hardest working entertainers in the world. The living legend, the fantastic Mr. Dynamite, James Brown.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. James Brown was Mr. Dynamite, the hardest working man in show business and many other less broadcastable names. To tell the story of how he got to be such a pivotal figure in American culture, you better bring your A-team. The new documentary, Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown, was produced by Mick Jagger and directed by the Oscar-winning, Emmy-winning Alex Gibney. The film airs on HBO on October 27th, and Alex Gibney returns to our Soundcheck studio today. Alex, welcome back.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
So a lot of your documentaries, I mean, the Enron documentary, Casino Jack, especially Taxi to the Dark Side, they kind of shine a light on topics, on stories that, you know, were perhaps intentionally kept dark.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you've got a guy who had the spotlight from, like, day one. Did this feel like a different kind of approach for you?
It was. I mean, everybody knows who James Brown is. But I think the impetus here was going back and looking at a couple of things, not that people missed, really, but that maybe had been overlooked to some extent. And one was his, you know, the film's really about how he changed the culture.
Mm.
And he changed the culture with his music, to be sure. But we give voice to a lot of the musicians in the film that a lot of people don't know about. The band.
Right.
He was the great band leader, but you don't know that much about the band. The other thing was he changed the culture in a lot of ways in terms of how he threw, in his own way, threw his shoulder behind the civil rights movement in a very different way than Martin Luther King or Stokely Carmichael. But from a cultural perspective, he added force to it in a way that brought it into the culture.
Right.
And so that was interesting. I hadn't, you know, before I started this, I didn't really know that much about that side of him.
So what was the impetus for you to go down this route in the first place?
Well, the impetus was I got a call from Mick Jagger. Would you like to do a film about James Brown? It's like
He probably doesn't get a lot of no's when he makes phone calls, does he?
No, and particularly when he says, how'd you like to do a film about James Brown? It's like, okay, one, two. You know, yes. Yes was the answer. It didn't take long to figure that one out.
Well, now, Jagger is clearly, you know, he has studied James Brown.
Right.
He produced the biopic about James Brown in addition to this documentary. And in your film, he actually has something pretty perceptive to say about James Brown and who he studied. Listen to this. This is from the forthcoming movie Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown.
He liked big bands. He liked a big horn section. And he liked instrumentals. He liked arranging. He liked to be a band leader. Carried some of that past of the swing era in a funny way.
Now that is something, Alex, that I hadn't thought of before. James Brown, the godfather of funk, as somebody looking back to the big band swing era.
Yeah, he's Duke Ellington. And that was an insight. I mean, I didn't really think of that either when I started this project. But what an insight, because you understand what he's taking from the past and how he takes that and pushes it into the future. But, yeah, he loved being on stage kind of. And it got to that point, too, where also all the musicians were on him as a performer. So he would do what the band called these hits.
Hmm.
Like he would always motion in a certain way and the drummers were supposed to pick up on that moment and they had to keep their eyes on him. But actually we found this little clip of Duke Ellington as the band leader. He's doing the hits back then too. So it was really fun to see how he pulled back from the past and then moved into the future.
Mm. The film, the documentary is Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown, directed by Alex Gibney, who's with me here on Soundcheck. There is some astonishing early footage from James Brown before he was James Brown. I mean, where did that come from?
You're talking about the black and white footage?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's from the Olympia in Paris. and I believe that's 66 and 67. So it's early, and it's riveting because that's the footage in which you can see him as the kind of the band leader, and, and it's kind of that transitional moment because he's got Maceo Parker on saxophone. You know, he's pulling from jazz. You don't think about jazz when you're thinking about James Brown, but really that's where he's pulling from, and he's got this. And then he's got this kind of rhythmic dance section. And then he had the women.
Right.
So he and also it comes out of sort of vaudeville and those acts that they used to do at the Apollo Theater. That's the other thing that, that Mick Jagger talks about a little bit, where they'd roll out a number of comedy acts, you know, all sorts of wild stuff that would be, you know, you'd think of as being part of the routine.
And you think of James Brown and that fantastic scream, and you've sort of dug into the roots of where that came from. He played Little Richard for 2 weeks.
Who knew that? I mean, the idea that that he actually literally, because TV wasn't that big, and you didn't see that many feature, you know, you didn't see feature documentaries. Nobody knew exactly what Little Richard looked like. So he literally was Little Richard. When Little Richard had to, you know, go off to L.A., there were a whole bunch of dates that had to be fulfilled, and James Brown was Little Richard.
So he was a Little Richard impersonator
to start
his career. And then, now, people talk about the Beatles on Ed Sullivan as a landmark moment. They talk about James Brown at the Apollo as a landmark moment. What about James Brown on Ed Sullivan?
James Brown on Ed Sullivan was a huge moment. And suddenly, this wild character who many people had seen through the Chitlin Circuit, and especially at the Apollo Theater, you know, sort of the culmination of the Chitlin Circuit, now they were seeing on the Ed Sullivan Show, which was the purveyor of the broadest possible sense of what was alive in culture at that moment. So it was this African-American world coming into a predominantly white environment that was spectacular.
This is a moment from Alex Gibney's film, Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown.
Now, understand that when black artists would come on Ed Sullivan, they would usually come on and perform with Ed Sullivan's house band, who were excellent musicians, but you got no soul out of them at all. James Brown made it clear he was coming on one way and one way only, and that was with his full band. So you were going to see the James Brown Show.
Great, great James Brown on the Ed Sullivan Show from the film Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown. It airs on HBO on October 27th, produced by Mick Jagger and directed by Alex Gibney, the Oscar-winning and multiple Emmy-winning director and my guest on Soundcheck today. This clip, as several others in the film do, ends with this magnificent shot of an apparently exhausted James Brown being escorted from the stage with a cape wrapped around his shoulder. The idea that he just gave so much.
Well, as Mick Jagger said, I mean, they worked that into the routine, particularly with his song Please, 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 where Danny Ray and sometimes Maceo Parker would drape this cape over Mr. Brown. And the idea was you had to protect him from himself. He was putting so much into the show that you had to put the blanket over him, put the cape over him, and lead him off. And then he would throw the cape off and come back and do it one more time.
It's great showbiz, and it's visual gold for a documentary maker like you.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, this documentary focuses essentially on the first 20 years or so of his career. And as you said before, sort of a dual path, the music and the social impact.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the music for a moment. First of all, Were you a fan? Did you grow up a James Brown fan?
Yeah, I was a fan, but I can't say that I was like a super fan. I mean, just going into something like this, one of the reasons I wanted to go into it was to really dig deeper. Mm-hmm. And that's often the fun of these projects for me.
Now, you said that, you know, what interested you was the idea that there were things maybe that people didn't miss, but they didn't understand the importance of. And one of those is the song Cold Sweat.
Yeah.
What is the significance of Cold Sweat?
It's the first funk song. I mean, it takes us into a whole new era. And so we were able to break that song down, particularly with the help of Pee Wee Ellis, who was the band leader of that time, who was just, and also you hear in Cold Sweat, you know, that he's pulling from all sorts of different places, from some very funky places, from cool jazz, from Miles Davis. I mean, and it all comes from the impetus of James Brown wanting something but not quite being able to articulate it.
So he goes to Pee Wee Ellis. Or he has Pee Wee Ellis come to him and says, I'm hearing this thing. Can you write that down? And Pee Wee Ellis goes and writes it down.
So I started putting notation to his grunts. It just came out of the bass line to Cold Sweat.
I don't care.
I've been listening to Miles Davis. And So What popped up in my head. So I took the part and just repeated it over and over. And we added a very important guitar part, contrasting all that to which is funky by itself.
From the film Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown by director Alex Gibney, you hear Pee Wee Ellis recounting how James Brown and Pee Wee sort of collectively put together this song, Alex. And the idea that Pee Wee Ellis is, in a way, sampling Miles Davis.
Right. That's exactly right. He's sampling Miles Davis and putting it into this new song, which becomes funk. And they didn't have, as Pee Wee says later, I mean, he didn't have any idea how big or influential this would be. They were just looking for something. And Mr. Brown, you know, heard something, but he couldn't quite articulate mm-hmm. it. And that's where he goes to people like Pee Wee to try to make it happen for him.
Now, James Brown, of course, would go on to become one of the most heavily sampled artists in hip-hop history, and especially his drummer, Clyde Stubblefield. You think he would have appreciated the irony if someone had pointed out to him, well, you know, your career is built on samples of other people's stuff?
I don't think Mr. Brown appreciated irony very much. That was not his thing. He was much more straight ahead.
Yeah. All right, so music is one thing, but the social impact as well. Somebody in the film refers to him as a civil rights movement of one. Might be Reverend Al Sharpton, might be someone else, but didn't he walk a fine line because he didn't want to be perceived as a quote-unquote race artist?
No, he didn't. He wanted to have a broad audience, the broadest possible audience. But at the same time, you know, he talked a lot about soul and soul power. And for him, soul, you know, he defines it earlier in the film where he said, soul is all about the word can't, by which he meant, you know, it's what people say you can't do because you're black. And if you internalize it, you realize you can do what they say you can't do. And for him, that's what it was all about. It was all about having a landscape in which you as an individual could do whatever you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in some ways, you know, he diverged from a lot of the civil rights figures in the sense that he didn't see the kind of systemic problems that were keeping people down. For him, it was all about individual empowerment. But wherever he saw, you know, obstacles in the way of individual empowerment, he fought hard to break them down.
And in the wake of Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination, there's a remarkable scene in the film where he goes ahead with a show in Boston and the audience is in an uproar. And they're rushing the stage and the Boston police are confronting, you know, these young black people who've rushed up on stage with James Brown. And in one of the most memorable moments in the film, Mr. Dynamite, James Brown calms the unruly crowd.
right. It's all right. It's all right.
Hey, you are my man, baby.
Oh, look, wait a minute. Let me finish the show. Wait a minute. Let me finish the show for everybody else.
I didn't know what to say about that myself. I'm sitting there on the drum still just waiting, you know, like, wow, what's going on?
This is no way. We are black. Now, wait a minute. Can't y'all go back down and let's do the show together? We're black. Don't make us all look bad. Let me finish doing the show. Come off the stage. Sit on the show. Let's represent our own selves. Now, step down. No, that's not right. You're not being fair to yourself and me, either. You're not being fair to yourself and me, ever, or your race. Now, I asked the police to step back because I figured I could get some respect for my own people. That makes sense. And are we together, Wayne? Hit the thing, man.
And the show goes on. I mean, Alex, he's like preaching to the choir there.
It's unbelievable. It's a church moment, no doubt. And also, you can see it. I mean, in the footage, you can see how badly wrong it could have gone. Because when those kids start racing the stage, big, burly, white Boston cops start tossing them off the stage.
Yeah.
And Mr. Brown says, no, don't be doing that here. We're fine.
Right.
You know, and he gets the cops to back off. Which was, that's the moment.
Yeah. And, you know, I get chills just thinking about, you know, and he says, look, I asked these cops to stop because I think I can get some respect from my own people.
That's
and,
right.
You know, when he asks, are you with me and are you not? And you hear that roar from the crowd that literally 60 seconds ago was up in arms.
Right.
It's amazing. The film is called Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown by Alex Gibney, my guest on Soundcheck today. It airs on HBO on October 27th. And then, of course, he goes on to write I'm Black and I'm Proud, which Reverend Al Sharpton in the film says this song, and I'll quote, literally changed the social dynamic of the United States. Now, James Brown's career is full of watershed moments. Where does this one rank?
This one is huge because, you know, I talked earlier about how interested I was and how he changed the culture. This was a moment where he literally changes the culture. I'm black and I'm proud. You know, it's not about somebody, you guys, you know, you white culture should give us something. It's like, as he says later, open up the door, I'll get it myself. You know, I'm black and I'm proud. I'm not going to be put down at all by the fact that I'm, you know, a different color. It's hugely powerful, and Reverend Sharpton even talks about how it changed things internally in the black community, that sometimes for lighter-skinned blacks, you know, who had, in some cases, achieved a kind of privileged position, and even Mr. Brown saw that earlier on, where he had a harder time coming up, you know, because some of the lighter-skinned black entertainers seemed to have a, you know, an easier time of it. Well, suddenly, I'm black and I'm proud. Suddenly, everybody's saying, whoa, that really dark black woman, she is hot. And everything changes.
Right. Now, is this a film that couldn't have been made while James Brown was alive? Would you have found it difficult to get people to speak as freely as they do in the making of this movie?
I think that's true. And I think even in this film, there was a reticence. There were a couple of people with whom I had to go back a second time to get them to talk because, you know, he was a complicated character. He was tormented by demons, and a lot of that came out in very violent ways, both with his band and also with a lot of his female companions. And I think a lot of those demons drove his art, but also compromised who he was as a human being. And I think that aspect and the willingness to speak honestly about it wouldn't have happened while he was alive, because also people at the same time, and it's an apparent contradiction or maybe a paradox, a lot of these musicians felt that it was super important to recognize how powerful a musical figure he was, and nobody wanted that to be undermined.
Right, right.
So it's the ability now, after the fact, after he's died, to be able to hold them both in your hands and say, yes, he was a flawed human being, and yes, he was a tremendous artist.
And we do, fortunately, still have most of these band members, you know, available to us to talk. For me, I'll mention one more bit from the film. Perhaps the most amazing sequence is Melvin Parker talking about pulling a gun on James Brown. You ever come for me and my brother, Maceo, you know, I'm going to use this. And the look on his face, it's like, oh, my God, he clearly meant it.
Yeah.
So James Brown, someone who could inspire both, you know, this great loyalty that you're talking about, at the same time that people really kind of hated his guts.
Well, the band members, you know, always felt mistreated. You know, there were a number of times where they quit on him. He treated them very badly. Even as he, you know, sort of revered them for their musical ability, you know, on the road, he sometimes they would get paid, sometimes they wouldn't, sometimes they'd be left in a town without any way to get back. So the only way really to protect against that was to stand up for yourself. And ironically, James Brown always respected that. If you kind of, you know, dug in your heels and stood up to him, he would sometimes back down.
All right, so this film, as we said, charts the rise of James Brown, about the first 20 years of his career. Things take a much darker turn later on. Will there be a second film that will maybe look at some of the ups and downs of the later years?
Maybe. That would be an interesting film in and of itself. I think we, you know, on this film, we felt there was so much to talk about that it was enough to take it this far. And we jump forward, I should say, in time to deal with his influence on the hip-hop era. But in terms of his own life, that second half of his life, it's more of a character study and probably deserves its own film.
Well, this film is called Mr. Dynamite, The Rise of James Brown. It airs on HBO on October 27th. Alex Gibney, the director. Alex, great to see you again. Nice job.
Thanks, John.
Do you subscribe to the Soundcheck podcast? Leave us a rating and a review in the iTunes store by searching for Soundcheck and clicking on Ratings and Reviews. Thanks for listening. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck. Just as sure as I take two eyes to make a pair.